You're listening to PodMini.
Hey everybody, and welcome back for Lucky Number 7, the 7th episode of the fairy tale mayhem we call Not Your Mother's Goose. My name is Topher Goggin. Get out your sledgehammers, as today we'll be bashing out a railroad tunnel with John Henry. We'll check in on Old King Cole's pipe and bowl in the news, and we'll take a break for a nap with Sleeping Beauty. First, though, put on your best face as it's time to gaze into the Queen's magic mirror and take another look at the story of Snow White. Let's begin. A beautiful young princess draws the ire of her stepmother when the evil queen's talking mirror identifies this Snow White as the fairest of them all. Whatever that means. Sounds like a slogan to run for district judge or something. But the queen is not pleased to lose this battle, and to deal with the inconvenience, she hires a hunter to take Snow White into the woods and dispose of her. This all sounds like a great idea, but when push comes to shove, the hunter doesn't have the stones to finish the job. He instead figures he can collect his paycheck and avoid execution himself, so long as he brings a deer heart back to the queen to convince her that the deed was done. He tells Snow White to hide in the forest and then, in a brilliant Disney cross-promotion, shoots Bambi's mom and takes her heart back to dupe the queen. Following the hunter's instructions, Snow White aimlessly wanders around the woods for a while. She eventually shacks up with 7 slob miners with names like Sleepy, Dweeby, and Moron, all of whom would still be shorter than Tom Cruise if you stacked them on top of each other. Snow White soon takes over the cooking and cleaning duties in the dwarf frat house. Now, this doesn't exactly do wonders for women's gender roles in society, but it does greatly improve the living conditions, which previously were about on par with what you'd expect at a 1-star motel that offers free Cinemax. The dwarfs, on the other hand, spend most of their time whistling while they work and growing sweet-ass beards that will come in handy if they ever have to impersonate ZZ Top. The whole living arrangement works out splendidly, at least until the queen's mirror spills the beans that Snow White is still alive. The queen, once again, not a happy camper. She dons a witch costume that would make Monty Python proud, tracks down Snow White, and gives her a complimentary poisoned candy apple. Snow White bites into the apple with the gusto of an old lady in a denture adhesive commercial, immediately knocking herself into an unfortunate state of suspended animation. On the plus side, however, at least her dwarf roomies are so kind as to put her on display in a glass coffin outside their house. Because that's not weird. They also take time to send the evil queen tumbling off a cliff to her death. No glass coffin for Queenie, though. Now, you might think that having a group of little people keeping a semi-dead woman in a glass box in their yard would make this story awkward enough. But you would be wrong. Instead, things go straight to the level of weirdness normally reserved only for the U.S. Senate Halloween party, as Prince Charming conveniently comes riding by the dwarf's place, spots the comatose lady, and promptly decides the best way to assist would be to dismount and give that gal a smooch. While I doubt this form of roadside assistance is the kind of jumpstart that AAA recommends, you do have to admit it's pretty effective. Snow White jolts wide awake, good as new. Next thing you know, the two of them fall in love, ride off into the sunset, and live happily ever after, blah 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 blah. Normally, we would now move on to the news, but I figure we might as well get all of the Sleeping Princess stories out of the way in one fell swoop, so we'll look at Sleeping Beauty right after this. Sleeping Beauty. Okay, it's part 2 of nap time. Time to get comfortable. A king and a queen welcome a new bundle of joy into their lives and call their baby girl Aurora. Surely they'll be pleased when, years later, Oldsmobile gives a 4-door sedan the same name. As any responsible parents of a newborn would, they summon a group of fairies to come bless their new daughter. Due to some typos on the guest list, however, an evil fairy gets past security and curses the baby to die if she pricks her finger on a spinning wheel on her 16th birthday. Not exactly what the king and queen had in mind. After a quick panic, one of the backup fairies on site steps in and waters down the curse so that Aurora will not actually die from the finger pricking, but instead will just fall asleep. Maybe for 100 years, maybe until she's kissed by a true love, or perhaps until the extended warranty on the castle waterbed expires. Any way you look at it, it's safe to say she won't need to refill her Ambien prescription anytime soon. Now, this is just me, but if I knew that my daughter would be cursed if she got pricked on a spinning wheel on her 16th birthday, I might be inclined to mention that piece of information and advise her to stay the hell away from spinning wheels on your birthday. But that's just me. The real king instead takes the genius step of banning spinning wheels throughout the kingdom, which of course means that everybody and their uncle has to immediately go out and get one off Craigslist to hide in their basement. Great work, King. Go buy yourself a number one dad t-shirt. Time passes and Aurora grows up. After a bustling childhood that may have involved moving in with the good fairies and possibly adopting the stage name Briar Rose, she reaches her 16th birthday. And darn if she doesn't just happen to stumble onto a woman using a curious-looking wheel to make yarn. Want to try? Sure, go ahead. Ow! Aurora, aka Sleeping Beauty, is zonked out like your dad after Thanksgiving dinner. At this point, one of the good fairies finally shows up, clearly having done a fine job of preventing disaster thus far, and decides the best way to deal with the situation would be to put everyone else in the kingdom to sleep too. So now we've got the entire country comatose. Hope none of the neighbors have an invasion on the calendar anytime soon. Also, if you're watching the movie, this would be an excellent time to run to the fridge. You won't miss much. Years in the future, Sleeping Beauty gets a wake-up call in the form of a kiss from a neighboring prince, who either just randomly showed up, or maybe first went through the trouble of killing off the bad fairy while she was disguised as a dragon. Check your local listings on that part. On a side note, between Snow White and Sleeping Beauty, it seems to me like hospitals could save a lot of time and expense by just hiring a kissing prince for every emergency room. I mean, who needs an AED when you can just station some royalty in the waiting area and solve all your problems? Anyway, Aurora wakes up, as does everyone else. She and her new prince live happily ever after and bring their kingdom great new riches thanks mainly to her new endorsement deal with 5-Hour Energy. Life is good. Okay, everyone, wake up. We're done with the sleeping stories, and it's time to move on for a look at the news. Here's the latest from the Rhymes Times. Paul Bunyan suffering from really huge bunions. Farmer in the Dell returns the wife he took. And a late-breaking scoop coming to us from the folks at our PBS bureau. Headless Horseman to guest star on Sesame Street. Sesame Street's lengthy list of celebrity guest stars increased by one yesterday, as producers announced that the legendary Headless Horseman will make a cameo on the show's upcoming season. The Horseman will warn youngsters about the dangers of decapitation, joining Cookie Monster for a rousing musical rendition of G is for Guillotine. The Horseman will also film a new segment called The Count's Head Count, where he and the Count will teach young viewers how to count to zero. Producers additionally announced that they hope to soon bring the famous Princess and the Pea onto the show, but they're waiting until writers figure out which letter of the alphabet she should introduce. There's more news to come, but first, perhaps you remember the old rhyme that went, "This old man, he played one, he played knick-knack on my thumb, ba-ba-da-da-da-da," and so on. But, you know, maybe you're out there and you've been wondering how to improve your own skills playing knick-knack. Well, thankfully, this week's sponsor is here to help.
Welcome to Masterclass.
Here at Masterclass, our latest course is turning the game of knick-knack on its head. Your instructor is the legendary world champion, Tom This Old Man Thomas. This Old Man takes you step by step through the groundbreaking tactics that have helped him capture a record 10 World Series of knick-knack necklaces.
You have to understand that everything you do when you're playing knick-knack conveys information. Whether it's on a drum, on a shoe, or on your knee, you'll be rolling home if you don't pay attention.
This Old Man guarantees that you will become a better knick-knacker as he reveals his time-tested strategies, including the winning play from last year's World Championship that stunned analysts everywhere.
So you'll notice what I did here is I first gave the dog a bone, and then I unleashed a double paddywhack that caught my opponent squarely in the right temple.
Don't miss the final lesson, with even more advanced and exotic strategies that have never been tried in official competition.
For this play, you're going to need a pair of flip-flops, a roll of masking tape, and a dustbuster. And you should understand that it's already been banned in the state of Kansas.
Order today, and we'll throw in Little Bo Peep's masterclass in sheep watching free of charge. Sales of that one have been a little slow. The time to knick-knack is now. As we say, this old man, he's alive. Get his class for $10.95. Improve your knick-knack with Masterclass today. Once you're done learning knick-knack, I'm pretty sure the Great Courses has a class on patty cake taught by Neil deGrasse Tyson, so that can be next. Now let's see what else is going on in the world. Third Little Piggy's request for roast beef causing tension with steers in barnyard. Humpty Dumpty, the face of new Say No to Crack campaign. And now two stories from our fairy tale world leaders department. Old King Cole receives medical marijuana card. After years of dodging the drug dogs and hiding out on Willie Nelson's tour bus, Old King Cole can finally call for his pipe and his bowl without fear of prosecution. Citing chronic headaches from the stress of ruling whatever the hell he's king of, Cole received his medical marijuana certification from the state yesterday. "A merry old soul is me," the king told reporters as he strolled back from his mailbox with the long-awaited envelope. He then pulled a gigantic joint out from under his crown and ordered his fiddlers three to chuck their violins in the royal dumpster and go learn some Grateful Dead tunes while he hung out on the throne. And further news from the leaders' department, Caesar commissions Emperor's new jockstrap. Pleased with the public response to his new clothes, Emperor Steve Caesar has requested that his tailors immediately go to work designing a custom athletic supporter to wear during his time as the starting catcher on the Imperial Fast Pitch softball team. Caesar issued a press release yesterday declaring, "After their fine craftsmanship on my wardrobe, these are the guys I want protecting my guys." The Emperor's statement also addressed complaints from some of the country's simpler citizens that couldn't see the new clothes during his parade last week. After consulting with former advisors to Bill Clinton, Caesar apologized for seeming to appear naked, but maintained it was really no big deal because, quote, "I didn't gyrate." John Henry. So apparently this John Henry guy you hear about might actually have been real, or at least that's what the internet tells me. So let's all pat ourselves on the back like we're actually studying history here. Real or legendary, what we're talking about is a big, strong dude who decides it'd be fun to make a living by blasting railroad tunnels through mountains. With a hammer. Now, if only he'd lived in the era of Wile E. Coyote, he'd know it's much easier to just paint what looks like a tunnel entrance on the side of the mountain and then watch the Roadrunner charge right through it. As the strongest, buffest guy around, Big John's popularity quickly shoots through the roof. But before he can buy a motorcycle and start cruising around town, some punk has to come along and introduce a steam-powered drill that does the same job instead. It's kind of like when the folks from IBM showed up with a computer that was actually the size of a semi-truck and acted impressed that it could play Jeopardy. Anyway, it appears that these drills might be just a tad bit more efficient than having guys tink-tink-tink with their hammers until they've blasted a hole through an entire stupid mountain. That means all the tink-tink-tinkers will soon be out of their jobs, and John doesn't like that. After a solid brainstorming session, he concludes that he can personally solve this problem by setting up a one-on-one match between himself and the drill, with the winner getting absolutely nothing. Good call there, John. The ensuing battle is a legendary matchup. The mighty man hammering side by side with the machine, complete with Las Vegas betting and Brent Musburger announcing on television, while probably rooting for the machine. Bing, bang, tink, tunk. Finally, in a photo finish, Big John pulls out a heroic victory for all of humanity. And then he croaks. Drops dead right there on the spot. Have a nice day. Happy drilling.
Hey, it's Cinderella, and you're listening to Not Your Mother's Goose. I will be too, as soon as I finish detailing my stepsister's car. Ugh, where are those mice?
Little Red Riding Hood. Our last story this week is a classic, our good old friend Little Red Riding Hood. we'll find there's a few details here that are a little tricky to process, you know, even beyond the whole talking wolf bit, and we'll catch those as we go along. I also have to say, the whole wolf community really should be looking into getting a new publicist. Having Mr. Big Bad out there as their only representative, and in multiple stories, really is not doing them any favors. But on with the story. Little Red Riding Hood, a lass who is either about 100 years ahead or behind the curve fashion-wise, unclear, sets off to take some food to her ailing grandmother. It appears, though, that Medicaid would only pay for a nursing home located in the middle of a deserted forest, so the trip is quite the excursion for our young lady. As Little Red leaves, her mother, Big Red, warns her to follow her GPS and stay on the beaten path. Well, we all know how well advice like that usually works out. Little Red makes it about 4 steps down the road before she's traipsing all over the place. She soon meets up with a talking wolf, which must be an everyday occurrence in these parts since she doesn't seem too fazed by the whole experience. The wolf, meanwhile, figures that this girl would make a nice lunch and strikes up a conversation with his newfound tasty morsel. During their discussion, Little Red prudently mentions that she's traveling solo, then goes on to disclose her precise destination, credit card information, social security number, and Snapchat password. She apologizes when she can't remember how to spell her mother's maiden name. Before they go their separate ways, the wolf convinces Little Red that any good granddaughter would surely stop and pick some flowers before going on to Grandma's. That gives him plenty of time to race ahead, gobble down Gran with a side of fries, put on her clothes, and get into her bed. It does make you wonder, did the wolf somehow convince Grandma to take all of her clothes off before he ate her? It seems like an awkward request to make. I'm just thinking out loud here. Little Red arrives a few minutes later, flowers in hand, and promptly demonstrates that her extraordinary stupidity is rivaled only by her prodigiously poor vision. Red starts to catch up on old times with Grandma, not picking up on the minor detail that her grandmother has been replaced by a wolf. At least not until he starts using his better-to-eat-you-with teeth to snarf her down for dessert. At just this moment, and this is rather good timing, a hunter saunters by and decides it would be wise to trespass inside the grandmother's place just to see if anything might be amiss. Not only that, but this particular hunter also happens to be an amateur veterinary surgeon, and he immediately performs a MacGyver-style operation with Granny's knitting needles to extract Little Red and her grandmother from the wolf's stomach unharmed. Piece of cake. Now, who's ready for dinner? It's time for this week's trip to Rapunzel's Jukebox, and our good friend Andrew Mitchell from the other ship is back. When I was listening to the work he did on the Simple Simon and Garfunkel Stiltskin songs a few weeks ago, I thought it would be fun to have him try something from Bob Dylan. One of the benefits, of course, is if you do a Dylan song, you don't necessarily have to work out all the lyrics in the parody because you can't really tell what they are anyway. I thought, though, in honor of the Big Bad Wolf who we just heard about with Little Red Riding Hood, we should at least have one song over the course of the show where we give a shout-out to all the fairy tale villains. Nothing ever goes right for them in the end. I'm sure deep down a lot of them are just misunderstood. So instead of blowing in the wind, here's Andrew Mitchell, here to salute the bad guys with Will Villains Ever Win on Rapunzel's Jukebox.
How many homes must a wolf blow down before a pig hits his pen? How many seas can a pirate sail before crocs jump off his hand? How many times must a goat trip trap by before trolls just take a stand? The question, my friend, is will villains ever win? The questions, will villains ever win? How many years can old Monstro exist before he gets 2 dudes to eat? How many years can a giant exist before Jack takes his stuff for free. How many times will Gaston have to flex? Oh, until Belle will finally see. The question, my friend, is will villains ever win? The question's, will villains ever win? How many times must a queen dress up before she can kill Snow White? Just how much gold must one man spin before he can keep the girl's child? How long must mighty Mufasa be gone till they say, please, Scar, lead the pride? The question, my friend, is will villains ever win? The question's, will villains ever win? The questions, will villains ever win?
Andrew Mitchell singing and playing here on Rapunzel's Jukebox on Not Your Mother's Goose. Thanks again to Andrew, and I can give you a little hint. We've got another song from him coming up in a couple of shows where we're going to kick the tempo back up again. In the meantime, that's it for this time, but we'll be back again soon to take an in-depth look at the story of Rapunzel. We'll try to get a good night's sleep with the Princess and the Pea, and we'll work on finding you a date with the new Heaps of Frogs online dating service. Until then, I'm Topher Goggin. The goose is loose. Come back soon for more fun on Not Your Mother's Goose.
Listening to a Podmany original production.
You're
Thank you.
Podmany.